This day in history in the great state of Arizona. Brought to you by Dr. David Dean, Assistant Professor of History at Grand Canyon University.
Good morning.
So Warren Earp goes to a duel without a gun.
Yeah, he was after the the investigation, they found that he didn't have any guns on him. He was unarmed when Johnny Boyette shot him, the ranch hand for Hooker's at Hooker's Ranch, and so he feared for his life because he thought the Earp brothers would come after him, but they never did.
Interesting. All right,
he's buried up in Wilcox, Arizona, Warren Earp.
Other historical events.
Well, probably the biggie and closest to your heart is a big construction project. July 7th, 1930, work began on the Hoover Dam here in Arizona. And that, of course, took a number of almost 30 years to complete. They had to dig out the tunnels to divert the water, and then they had to pour all that concrete and everything. And so that got started on July 7th.
I didn't realize it was 30 years. Did I hear that right?
To finish all the different it took 5 years to build the dam, but 30 years to kind of do all the site selection and to do the whole project was a 30-year endeavor. But the building of the dam itself was just 5 years.
And pretty much the only reason Las Vegas exists.
Henderson. And, of course, there's a lot of myths around it. Are there any dead bodies in the people fall in the concrete? Oh, well, got to keep production going, right? That's modern construction, right? Mob construction.
Right.
But, no, there are no dead bodies in the dam concrete.
That we know of.
Did I say that right? In the dam concrete? Yeah.
But there were a lot of deaths.
There was.
A lot of deaths. I mean, by today's standard, it's unbelievable. I think it's like 100 people died building that dam.
Yeah, I think officially it's 96, but some sites, sources say as many as 112.
Wow.
People died. Well, construction in those days, and you've got flying 8 yards of concrete in overhead and pouring these big blocks, and you had to do them in these different sequences, and all the blasting of the stonework and to cut the channels and just the precarious roads of trucks and the fumes that inside the tunnels from the truck exhaust. I mean, there was talk about it, not an OSHA work site,
Boy, let me tell you. The thing that intrigues me about a construction project like that is you go out and you survey the location. And you realize you're probably 100 miles from the closest grocery store. You literally have to build an entire city before you could even start the construction of the dam.
Yeah. In fact, they've got to provide housing, food, water, all that stuff for the 21,000 workers that ended up working on that project. I mean, that's a big undertaking.
It is. Well, it's a big dam, that's for sure. At one time, I think it was the highest in the world, wasn't it? I don't think it holds that now, but at one time
now it's
it was
the second highest in the country and the 18th highest in the world.
Okay.
But it's interesting. It's the first man-made structure that exceeded the amount of masonry that you would find in the pyramids of Giza.
Now, that says something about the pyramids.
That they lasted four centuries or so before, because they were about 2000 BC. So they lasted almost four centuries before something else man-made rivaled it.
The Hoover Dam. And I always enjoyed driving over it. And I really resent the fact that the new bridge doesn't allow you to view it.
Yeah, the new bridge is off, and I mean, people like it when they're heading to Vegas or Laughlin or wherever, so they can just woohoo, get to where they're going. But that was the whole beauty of driving to Las Vegas, was to go down across the dam, crawl.
Do they still let you drive across the scenic route?
No.
And they put like visors on the bridge so you can't see out.
I completely understand.
You do?
Oh, well, can you imagine people stopping to view the bridge or slowing down? You're on an interstate going with a speed limit of probably 75. You know, I get keeping the traffic tunnel vision moving.
Especially with everybody on their cell phones, they got to stick the phone out the window.
Exactly. You know.
It's and a beautiful picture of the guardrail.
And talk about an incredible feat of engineering, the new bridge.
Yeah.
That was really cool how they built that thing.
It's, what, just one big arch span from side to side there, and then they built the deck on a river on top of it, or the roadway on top of it?
Well, it always impresses me the way they start on each side and build to the center.
Yeah. Yeah.
That impresses me.
You hope it lines up, right? I was just watching a documentary about some of the trains in India that worked their way up to the Himalayas, and this British officer that was in charge of the trains committed suicide because one of his tunnels ended up not lining up. They dug from each side. And he figured out that they were pretty far off. And so the shame of that engineer, and he committed suicide.
And it just could have been a dimple in his slide rule.
Yeah. Or something, a mark on it that he had forgotten about or something. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk about the last topic you've got here to cover. This typically is the time of year we're appointing judges to the Supreme Court if there is an opening.
Well, an opening can come up any time during the year, but this particular weekend, of course, our president is working through a list of names nominating Supreme Court justice to fill a vacancy, and of course, there's a lot of news and stuff on that. But on this day, July 7th, 1981, our own Sandra Day O'Connor here from Arizona was appointed to the Supreme Court, the first woman Republican nominated by Reagan. And she served for over 24 years on the bench. And
grew up as a neighbor of Harry Hooker at Sierra Bonita Ranch, whose range boss shot Warren Earp.
Now, does this all tie in?
How do you wrap this up like that?
I spend hours upon hours not thinking about this just so that serendipity could occur.
Yeah, she was right there outside of Duncan on her family ranch.
Yeah, and of course, she served in the state Senate for a period of time. She served as a judge here in the state and then came to the attention of the national attention when she was nominated. She's got a pretty conservative but moderate record on the court. I don't think anybody at the backside of her career looked back and said, oh, she was the worst justice ever. And I don't think anybody walks back and says, oh, she was the best justice ever. But
she was our justice.
She was our justice. And, you know, she's a phenomenal, even after her retirement from the court, she's a writer, she's a speaker, she's involved in the community and everything. And just what an incredible contribution that our state can make to this kind of national dialogue that goes on right now about Supreme Court justices.
Any other justices from Arizona we can claim?
Not that I'm aware of. There are some controversial judges, of course. Thurgood Marshall, the first African American justice. William McKinley, McKinley, I think it was. It was a president that then became a Supreme Court justice. You have terrible Supreme Court justices like Roger Taney, who decided the Dred Scott case. So John Jay, who decided kind of early, wrote early Supreme Court kind of precedents kind of things. And Brandeis, who was probably one of the most progressive, some would say liberal, but certainly changed the flavor of the court. You've got the Warren Court during the Kennedy administration. The Supreme Court is such an important institution. Hamilton got it wrong. Alexander Hamilton said, oh, yeah, the courts, the least effect to our democracy. He got it wrong. They have a big importance to our democracy.
But should he have it right?
Well, it's important to protect the laws that are passed by our legislators. And so that's that role of the court to do that, to protect, not to legislate, but to protect that role of these are the laws.
Is there an argument that the Supreme Court has become a writer or creator of laws?
Well, that is certainly a very loaded question. I think some would answer yes and some would answer no, but I kind of think it comes down on what side of a particular case or opinion you're on to that effect. But overall, I would think that some of that about legislating from the bench at the Supreme Court level is a bit more hype and smoke and mirrors. It might happen at the lower courts, but at the Supreme Court, I think it's a little bit more hype and than we get credit, you know, than we should give due credit for.
One of the very earliest biographies I ever read that wasn't a homework assignment, and I don't even remember why I picked this biography, but it was Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And an interesting life, for sure, but I'll never forget how he opened his autobiography. The study of the law is about as interesting as a cold bowl of oatmeal.
Yeah.
That's by a Supreme Court justice. And you're appointed for life to study a cold bowl of oatmeal. I don't know. I think it's a lot more interesting than that.
Well, I think so, too. What I find when I read court cases, Supreme Court cases and things, is to read kind of the opinions on both sides, the dissenting opinion and whatnot, because you'll often find the clauses of interpretation or the real meaning in those writings. And any good study goes beyond just the 10 words that summarize a case. And I think that Americans should pay attention to important cases and be able to rattle off 10 important cases like Roe v. Wade and Dred Scott and Marbury versus Madison and things. That those are cases that Americans should know because it tells us a lot about who we are as a country.
It really codified some pretty critical segments in our society.
And they're very reflective of culturally where we are at each of those points.
Very. Some of those decisions would go down very different if they were addressed today.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yes. But that's why the controversy of picking a Supreme Court justice under one administration that's going to have that ability to shape things for a very long time has to be a very thoughtful process.
We're at a pretty critical time right now.
Yeah, and with filling the two vacancies that are really there now. You know, under the Roosevelt administration, they had expanded the court to 15 members. It could have up to 15 members. And so can you imagine what a court case and a set of opinions and things would look like if we had 15 justices on the bench?
I did not know that. Yeah. I never knew that. Yeah. Who retracted it back?
Well, it's not retracted.
Oh.
It's set that it could be up to 15 justices, but tradition holds it at, what, 9 or so right now?
Oh. We're here with Dr. David Dean talking about really pretty much about Independence Day celebration in about around the state of Arizona and the fact that Sandra Day O'Connor was appointed this July 7th. That was Reagan, right?
Reagan did that in 1981.
Mm-hmm. 1981. And she was the first woman.
First woman, mm-hmm.
Okay.
And now there's a new movie out about Ruth Bader Ginsburg that is getting a lot of critical acclaim. And so if you're interested in, again, maybe seeing a kind of different side of the court and understanding kind of some of the thought processes in there, maybe go catch that movie.
I've had that movie on my bucket list since it came out. I can't find it. Maybe we'll have to talk about that when we get back. We'll be right back, y'all. Hang on.